Hello and welcome to the September installment of a podcast series with Peppers and Rogers on creating customer value. I'm Lauren Hoyt, site editor. Joining us this month is Martha Rogers. Martha will take questions from Search CRM readers on building trust with customer strategy and customer equity in the short term and the long term.
This is Martha Rogers. I'm delighted to be answering some questions from readers for Search CRM. We have two categories of questions this month. We're going to be looking at some questions about building trust with customer strategy, and in a moment I'll also address some customer equity long-term and short-term issues questions. But first, building trust with customer strategy. Our first question is this. People dislike or fear certain products and would not demand them at any price. Can you suggest ways to manage the negative demand for a product and attract and work with those customers? I'm thinking of a healthcare marketer trying to market cancer screenings to patients and customers, for example. I think this is an excellent question because there are some things that people just don't like to think about, some of them because they're fearful, such as cancer issues, or maybe even buying life insurance. It's not fun to think about dying, and of course we really should call it death insurance, but then nobody would buy it. So, and then there's some other products that are just not really fun to think about. So nobody wakes up in the morning and says, wow, today is the day I get to go sign up for natural gas or cancer screening or life insurance. These just are not the kinds of exciting things that people look forward to buying. Now, since that's the case, what do we do? Well, many people, of course, are very responsive to taking care of themselves in order to protect themselves for their families. So you get your cancer screening today because then you have a better chance of living through a problem and being there for your children and grandchildren and spouse and all that. But some cases, it might be interesting to work with partners. So, for example, even if patients are not volunteering themselves to come through and look for these kinds of products, maybe the physicians will encourage their patients or the insurance agents will encourage their policy holders. And then, of course, we also have the possibility of making it part of something more. So if I'm writing you health insurance, then I charge you a different rate if you come in every year for your mammogram and your cervical cancer test, or if you have your prostate test every so often or something like that. So it becomes a part of a bigger picture, just as we might make car insurance cheaper for safe drivers. So I hope this has been some help. Excellent question. Here's another one on building trust with customer strategy. I read your recent response, should profitable customers be the top priority for our customer service efforts? In the case of Sprint, I think they have a historically pathetic record in allocating resources to customers and handling customers who are calling the various support channels. They are especially weak in chat and email since most of it is offshored. Can you expand further on best practices and standard operating procedures in making sure some of the unprofitable repeat inbound calling customers issues do not represent systemic problems? In other words, how can we put systems in place so that the department making the decision to cut off those unprofitable customers has all the information and have verified that the problems are not justified? And how is this related to other profitable customers who are not taking the time to contact customer support and complain and are not insisting on receiving the service and responsiveness they're entitled to? I think this is an excellent question. It is rich with a lot of issues, and I must admit that I've gotten a lot of response both in both directions, both supporting and not, about the Sprint questions that we've been addressing lately. Yes, Sprint does have some systemic problems, it seems, with how they are dealing with customers and their general customer service and general customer satisfaction. At the same time, they, of course, were able to eliminate 1,000 customers out of 53 million that they had. So we'll leave aside for a moment whether or not Sprint is doing the right thing and instead address the more interesting issues in this question, which is how can we put systems in place so that when we know we're cutting off customers, that we're not doing that either prematurely or from a perspective that doesn't really, that's not really fair. And that's really brings us to the issue we have here, which is that in order to know whether or not we should rid ourselves of below-zero customers, we first have to understand whether our below-zero customers are truly that or whether we're only looking at their current value. So we need to understand about customers a couple of things. We have to understand their actual value, their current sort of predictable value based on what we've seen from them to date. And then we also have to be able to understand about them their perspective, their potential value. And that's harder to understand. Many companies don't bother. But if I were to understand potential value, then, like some banks, I would recognize that a college student who doesn't have much income today could, if I become, if I build a close relationship with him or her now, become much more valuable to me over the next 40 or 50 years. So understanding not just the current or actual, but also the potential value of customers is important. Then we will know whether or not a BZ is truly a BZ, below zero customer. But what we're really looking for in this kind of a situation is two things. One is, are we being fair? Are we being fair because if customers call and complain, are they, you know, justified? And if they are justified, then how do we make sure that we don't ignore that systemic problem, but instead use the information that we're getting from these customers to solve that problem before a competitor solves it for those customers? And in any case where we see a chronic annoyance among our customers, or for that matter among our employees who have to deal with those customers, then we are probably looking at a real vulnerability in our own business model. But in addition to looking at the question of are we being fair, the other piece of this puzzle is, are customers being fair? Because in most cases, most customers are being fair, but in some cases they're not. In some cases they're gaming the system. In some cases, they're doing things that are taking unfair advantage of the company. And if they do that, then the cost of serving them has to be borne by someone, and that someone is better customers. So we talked before about how Filene's Basement actually sends customers who buy clothing, wear it to a special occasion, and then try to return it as unused. Sends them letters and says, we don't want you to be our customer anymore. That's because the customer has clearly been unfair. So I think that the real question here is we have to really exhaust the answers to both of those questions. Is the customer being unfair, and are we really being unfair? And once we've answered those questions honestly and from an understanding of a customer's actual and potential value, then we can probably make the best decisions for the company and for all of our other customers. We'd like to address now the topic of customer equity, long-term and short-term. We believe that it's important to build current revenue with customers, but also to do things today that will build customer equity, that is the long-term value of customers. So our first question goes like this. Do you have experience with the anticipated benefits to an organization of setting up a call center? For example, is there a way to know if it will be beneficial to the company looking at factors such as these? Increased operational efficiency of X percent, consolidation benefits of X percent, increased customer satisfaction benefits of X percent. These are very good questions, very good basic question, but I'd like to ask the question another way. Rather than just asking whether or not we can see a kind of efficiency that comes from using call centers, we know that they're necessary, and rather than thinking of them as a sort of necessary evil, I would love for us, since we're willing to think about predictive measures anyway, instead of thinking about call center profitability or efficiencies, I'd like to look at what the call center contributes to customer profitability and then look at call center effectiveness in doing that. So, for example, Capital One has call centers in which the call reps are actually based, their compensation is based partially on not how many calls they can get through in an hour, but rather how many problems or questions are resolved on the first call. And it's interesting that in such a situation where they are trained and encouraged to handle customer problems, they are empowered to resolve problems and go ahead and take care of things, that they actually turn 15% of their incoming calls, nearly all of which are about problems and complaints. All right, so all the calls are, about that. 15% of those incoming calls are turned into additional sales, that is, sales of additional products, cross-sells and upsells. So that's what can happen when we the call center reps that are really listening to customers and so forth. The opposite of that would be the kinds of call centers where the goal is to try to keep as much money in the company today, but at the expense of the future. So, for example, it's become notorious that Vonage is a very easy company to sign up for. You can go right online, you can sign up for Vonage service, but if for some reason you'd like to discontinue your service, you can't do that online. You have to dig out, with some difficulty, a telephone number where nobody really answers it, and then after you call that, you do something else, and it takes you a month or two during which you're paying the service fees, eventually you might be able to get disconnected. That's sort of not playing fair, per our earlier conversation. Also, a couple of stories about Alltel. Some really, these are true stories. One of them happened to my husband. One of them happened to a very good friend. One of them had been a customer for 10 years and had a billing dispute of $75 and called, and the customer service rep was clearly working from a manuscript for the problem, but took into consideration not one bit the value of a customer who's been a customer for 10 years. I tried to explain to her at $100 a month that that would have been a $12,000 customer, and she had no interest in that. In fact, she pointed out several months in those 12 years in which the payment was a few days late. Not months late, you understand, not even weeks late, just a few days late, so we weren't really that ideal for customers anyway. And so she kept the $75, thanks, and lost the customer. So we know that customer would have cost about $300 to replace. That kind of training is going to make it very difficult for a call center to pay off in the long run. Another Alltel story is for a friend whose brother, a rather relatively young man, had to enter a nursing home with pretty serious illness and is having to use up all of his funding to do that. And so he wanted to discontinue his Alltel service and was told that, no, he must have some service that he must get out of it because he's showing a few calls on his monthly bill, and they wouldn't let him out from under it until he was up. And so there was another $60 that had to go on. And so he had to pay the other $60, thanks, and there was no way to disconnect it sooner, and there was no way to take anything into consideration given his situation. So what our friend is going to do is tape two quarters to the bill every month and pay 50 cents a month for the next 10 years and see whether or not at some point they sort of realize that that's not really a good way for them to deal with a customer who genuinely needs to get out from under the service. The point is that we have to ask the right questions. How do we make sure that we're using the call center to increase the value of the customers who need to use it, rather than just how do we deal with this evil necessity in our company of taking care of stuff? And how do we think of call center effectiveness even more than call center efficiency? Our last question for this month is an excellent one, and one that we see a lot of companies wrestling with lately. The question is, how do you define customer experience management, or CEM, versus customer relationship management, or CRM? Are there any significant differences? In my mind, there are quite a few differences between the two. If we look at customer relationship management, or CRM, that's sort of how a customer looks to a company. And if we think about CEM, or customer experience management, then that's really how the company looks to the customer. Now, in way too many cases, the way a customer looks to the company is sort of the way prey looks to a vulture. It's something that we can light on and make the most of and use up, and customers can feel that. So when we talk about the really managing the experience for customers, then we're talking about something that's the opposite. We're talking about making it worthwhile for customers to do more business with us because we become more worthwhile to them, taking the time to see their point of view, understanding how to be reciprocal with them, understanding how to be trustworthy. When we take their point of view, then what we're going to do is we're going to become more relevant for them. We're going to make it worth their while. We're going to look out for their interests as well as our own, and it's going to be something that a customer can truly feel. So I actually like the phrase customer engagement management as being CEM, even more than customer experience management. so that we know for certain that by experience we don't just mean a little bit of theater in the store or maybe some magical thing that happens that's very special in a direct mail piece. It's not that. It's really the entire experience that helps to build equity, another CEM, customer equity management. Thanks so much for this opportunity. I look forward to answering more questions from you folks. Don Peppers will be with you next month, and we'll meet back here soon. Keep the questions coming. Thanks so much.
Thanks to Martha Rogers for sharing her insight with us this month, and thanks to our listeners. Be sure to join us again next month for a podcast on creating customer value with Don Peppers. For Search CRM, I'm Lauren Hoyt.